This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, February 18th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on this edition of Ozarks, taking a smoking ban in Fayetteville to the next level. A major environmental award for Northwest Arkansas, collecting books here for students in small southern Arkansas towns, and for the third consecutive show, Theater Squared is extending a play productions run. The details to all of that ahead. First, one of the big issues facing the Arkansas legislature this winter is getting closer to discussion in the House and the Senate. Governor Mike Beebe is already defending his effort to revamp the way criminals are punished in Arkansas, even before the bill is filed. As Kelly McNeil reports from Little Rock, prosecuting attorneys are cautioning Republican lawmakers that the measure could hurt public safety.
This bill is Governor Beebe's baby. He's concerned about the burgeoning prison population. He brought in the Pew Center on the States to study the issue and convened groups like the Sheriff's Association and the courts. The result is almost done. A mammoth 160-page bill. Even the prosecutors who are now objecting say they actually agree with the premise and like most of the legislation.
Our concerns are about 10 sections in this bill out of 122.
But prosecutors like Robin Carroll of Union County say they're worried those few sections could hamstring their ability to lock away dangerous criminals. The attorneys point to provisions that could make prisoners eligible for parole earlier. Carroll says people convicted of all but the most serious felonies could be out quickly. Thieves, arsonists, child pornographers.
One of our concerns had been, after reading the bill, that certain defendants, regardless of whether they pled to 20 years or a jury gave them 20 years, that they would be parole eligible after serving 120 days.
But Governor Beebe says that's not how it's intended to work.
It's not the intent of the bill, and if it does, we'll fix it. In fact, what I've even told them is I'm willing to put a provision in the front of the bill that says, notwithstanding anything herein, no sentences are changed with respect to violent crime. I mean, that's how strongly I feel about that.
Another sticking point is the manufacture of meth. Right now, it carries a long sentence. But reformers want to allow lesser sentences for small-scale meth cookers. Pulaski County Attorney Larry Jegley says they're letting too many people off the hook.
Manufacturing, delivery of methamphetamine, cocaine, and all that. Don't tell me those people aren't dangerous, because they are.
But Governor Beebe says that's one more instance in which the state has to get its priorities straight.
It's just a function. We ain't got enough tax dollars. We need to send them down there to prison. The question is, do you send them for 6, 8, 10, 12 years or 40?
Prosecutor Larry Jegley says there's one more bone of contention.
There are financial incentives, and nobody's told me where the money's coming from, but there are financial incentives to reward jurisdictions for sending less people to the pen. It's like paying the highway department not to patch potholes.
But supporters of the bill say the incentives will also be based on declines in the overall crime rate. The bottom line, says Governor Beebe, is that violent criminals won't be released early. The bill's supporters say the changes they're proposing have been shown to work in other states and could save Arkansas hundreds of millions of dollars. They still hope to file the bill next week.
Kelly McNeil of KUAR filed that report from Little Rock. Last night in Fayetteville, a packed crowd at a basement bar on Dixon Street in Fayetteville gathered to listen. Most of the more than 70 in the Copper Bar at U.S. Pizza were wearing stickers promoting a smoke-free Fayetteville. Tyler Clark, the project coordinator for Northwest Arkansas Tobacco Free Coalition, and Cambry Horn Brooks, director of development of Community Clinic, spoke at the forum last night. They're with me now inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome to Ozarks at Large, Tyler.
Thank you, Kyle. Glad to be here.
It was held at a bar last night. Coincidence?
Well, yes. Actually, it's considered a restaurant. The Copper Bar is downstairs from U.S. Pizza, so it's actually considered a restaurant. But we want to give back to the community that's treated us so well in Fayetteville, so we chose to use U.S. Pizza and Copper Bar. It's a great location. So, yeah.
Last night, you spent some time talking about air quality in Fayetteville bars. How did you study the quality of air in bars?
Well, we commissioned a study. This is our fourth study with the Roswell Cancer Institute in New York, and we had two people go into the 22 smoking bars and six smoke-free bars in Fayetteville with almost like a little R2-D2-looking contraption that monitors air quality, and we sent those results off, that data back off to New York, and they sent us back a report of what our air quality is like in Fayetteville smoking bars and non-smoking bars.
And what What did the study find?
Well, sadly, in those smoking bars, as we suspected, as we've always know that there are pollutants in those smoking bars, almost 21 times higher in bars allow smoking versus non-smoking, the pollutants that are inhaled deeply into the lungs that can cause the issues with lung cancer and the hardening of the arteries and coronary heart disease, et cetera. So those smoking bars are 21 times more dangerous, if you will, than non-smoking bars.
Open this question to both of you. All places to get food in Fayetteville, when I sit down, are smoke-free. Most places to get a drink. So why not let smokers have a Tables and Ale or Kingfish or White Star or Beer Keg where they can have a beer and smoke whatever they want?
Our purpose here is not about big laundry bills or dry cleaning bills or dirty ashtrays. What we're looking at right now is a public health matter. We know that workers and patrons are exposed to levels of secondhand smoke that are way beyond the EPA's recommended level, and this is a known carcinogen. And so being that it's a work site and a public place to go, we feel that there is a public health issue to be addressed.
Any idea how many places you can still smoke in the city of Fayetteville?
Approximately 35 bars are taking the exemption of the law.
There are no 100% smoke-free cities in Arkansas. There are about 400 across the country.
Well, there actually is a very small town just north of Hot Springs. It's a resort town, and the name escapes me right now, and I apologize. But they actually have three or four restaurants and bars. It's tiny, and they actually are a comprehensive smoke-free city in in Arkansas.
Okay. There are no towns comparable to Fayetteville's size.
Very true. Fayetteville is unique in that.
What makes you think that Fayetteville is ready or can go smoke-free?
Well, number one, we survey the registered voters in Fayetteville to get their opinion on and what they think about a comprehensive smoke-free policy. Fayetteville, people forget about the 1990 decision to actually make theaters and grocery stores and other places in Fayetteville smoke-free. So we've had the oldest smoke-free law in the books in Fayetteville in Arkansas. So the 2003-2004 initiative came through. That just made us even more great to the state. And, of course, Act 8, the indoor air law came in behind that, too, and helped us reduce our smoking rates. So we think Fayetteville was ready for that. We surveyed over 1,000 Fayetteville residents, Fayetteville registered voters, a few weeks ago, actually, and we had a 64% of those who surveyed said they would support a comprehensive smoke-free bar and tavern ordinance here in Fayetteville.
So what happens next?
I think that we wait and see what the community's wanting to do. That's really the whole purpose. You know, they say educate, 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 then legislate. And the social norm change is a great indicator when we can pass a policy that everyone agrees on would be the better for the citizens of Fayetteville.
At the conclusion of the forum last night, we were pleasantly surprised that Council Member Adela Gray from Ward 1 announced that she is going to support a amendment that would actually clear the exemption for the current ordinance in Fayetteville, which would make Fayetteville comprehensively smoke-free in those bars and taverns. So that was fantastic news.
Tyler Clark is the project coordinator for Northwest Arkansas Tobacco Free Coalition. Cambry Horn Brooks is director of development of Community Clinic. They both spoke last night at a forum discussing a smoke-free Fayetteville. They were in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio earlier today. This is Ozarks at Large. The Conservation Fund, a major land preservation nonprofit organization based in West Virginia, announced this week that a pilot project based in Northwest Arkansas will be honored with an inaugural National Green Infrastructure Implementation Award. The project, Green Infrastructure Planning, Linking Arkansas Communities, was among three chosen from around the country. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Urban planners now recognize that along with residential, business, and industrial infrastructure, cities must also set aside or even create green infrastructure. These are recreational green spaces that provide pleasure to human communities, as well as critical habitat hubs for wildlife linked together by natural corridors and held in conservation. 3 years ago, the U.S. Forest Service proposed a strategy to establish green infrastructures to integrate urban development with conservation practices. Six pilot projects under Green Infrastructure and Wildland Urban Interface Program were launched in the southeastern region, including one in northwest Arkansas. The project here is a collaboration between the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association, Beaver Water District, and the Arkansas Forestry Commission's Urban and Community Forestry Program. Patty Irwin, an urban forestry coordinator with the Arkansas Forestry Commission, secured a USDA Forest Service grant in 2007 to initiate conservation assessment in the two-county area.
We have Farmington, Greenland, Fayetteville, Johnson, and then we went out to the Weddington Ozark National Forest area because that has been designated as an urban forest, and so we wanted to make sure that we incorporated that into the plan.
60 volunteers broke into four working interest groups, environment, education, heritage, parks and trails, etc., that gathered data on geographic features, wild habitat like rare wetlands, prairies, savanna sites, historic resources like churches, cemeteries, and heritage routes, and farms and recreational resources. All of those elements were mapped, which have been shared at a series of public meetings. Green infrastructure planning is a highly collaborative, long-term, science-based approach that comes out of the first principles of landscape ecology and urban planning. Think lush city parks, trails, and pockets of intact urban wilderness stranded together by green alleyways. Since completing their Linking Arkansas Communities pilot project, coordinators here have been busy networking their model.
Well, the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association put together a DVD, and that DVD was then presented to several communities and the Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission. And so everybody really realized, oh my gosh, you know, here's a great opportunity for us to really get a trail system going and at the same time manage our natural resources along with it. And so the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association has been working with the Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission's Transportation Committee. And so they are presenting it to other communities that they work with, and we've had communities that weren't involved in the original plan, such as Rogers, that have asked to be a part of the program. So our goal is that we're going to go all the way to the Missouri border with this plan.
Northwest Arkansas is the only region in the state with a green infrastructure plan, although Patty Irwin says Jonesboro is starting to replicate theirs. And the time is ripe. Economic development has slowed due to the recession, giving green planners an opportunity to develop better strategies for land use and to set conservation planning priorities. The Conservation Fund, a national preservation group based in West Virginia, trains community leaders in green infrastructure planning from Delaware to Hawaii. The Conservation Fund is also presenting its first National Green Infrastructure Implementation Awards this month to three top recipients, Maryland, Michigan, and to the Linking Arkansas Communities Project here.
Well, I have to admit I wasn't surprised because the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association has done such an awesome job with this green infrastructure plan. And they are well ahead of the game with most communities that have started the process. And so, of course, I was very proud, and they were all so excited. And it's so nice, you know, when you get a pat on the back for all the hard work you've done. And this is a national award, so that's huge. And so now, you know, all the communities in the nation are going to know that Fayetteville, Arkansas has a group of people that are working for Northwest Arkansas Communities. And it was pretty exciting.
The Conservation Fund says the Arkansas group accomplished real on-the-ground solutions to conservation priorities and is leading the nation in green development planning. And Fayetteville city planners will be meeting next week with members of the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association to update the city's 2025 plan to 2030 using Northwest Arkansas green infrastructure data as part of its enduring green network.
Well, one thing that the green infrastructure plan does is that it helps in the land use planning process so that those key areas that are very important as far as the ecological services that they provide, protecting our watersheds and things like that. As our communities are growing, they now have the tools to identify those areas. So if someone is wanting to come in and whether it's put in roads or a development or whatever it might be, then they'll know that those areas need to be protected, and they know where they have better areas for development, and so they can kind of adjust their planning process to adapt to those various opportunities.
Conservation Fund leaders also pointed to the Linking Arkansas Communities Project as an exemplary model of communities focusing on their conservation priorities in conjunction with their economic goals. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information about green infrastructure planning, you can visit the What's Happening link at FayettevilleNatural.org. And Patty Irwin also wanted us to tell you that a green development workshop is planned for March 10th at Embassy Suites in Rogers. For more information about that, you can visit arctrees.org. Students at the University of Arkansas and at Fayetteville High School have been collecting books for a while now, not for themselves, but for students in a small southern Arkansas school district. As Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker reports, it's not the first time the Arkansas Reads program has done this.
Hoping to encourage elementary school students to develop the habit of reading, the Arkansas Reads, or the Hogs and Dogs program, has launched its second annual book drive. Dr. Suzanne McRae is the Vice Provost of Enrollment and Dean of Admissions at the University of Arkansas. She says the program was launched with cooperation from a variety of offices from across the University of Arkansas and the Fayetteville High School.
We hope to expand our high school involvement to include lots of other high schools as well in this effort. But Fayetteville High School has been very enthusiastic. They collect books at basketball games for admission to a basketball game. You can bring a book that's suitable for K through 5. And so that's a very exciting thing that they've done as well. So we've gotten a lot of support there, been great support in campus involvement and departments across campus collecting books and really wanting to share with others their love for reading, and a lot of parents who've enjoyed books with their children, and now their children are grown up and are growing up, and they want to share those books with other children.
Last year's book drive benefited Marvel Elementary School in Marvel in Phillips County. The facility was fairly new, but needed the books.
We collected about 800 for the elementary school and a couple of hundred for the high school, but our focus was the elementary school. So we went to Marvel. The chancellor flew in, and that was really wonderful. The provost, Provost Gaber and Chancellor Gerhardt were there, and they read to students, and they presented the books. It was really quite exciting. We also took the Razorbug. I had never traveled with the Razorbug before, and it was like traveling with a rock star. I think at one point John Baltz, who was driving the bug, was nearly driven off the road as people are trying to take pictures and things. And I hadn't had that experience before. It was quite interesting.
The program worked with Dr. David Joliffe, Brown Chair in English Literacy at the U of A, to identify Marvel Elementary as a recipient of the books from the first book drive. Thereafter, phone calls and requests from other Arkansas schools started pouring in.
From that, we picked Hughes Elementary as our next school. They're really working on literacy issues. They have some difficulties there. They have some testing issues. They come from an area that is struggling economically. I think 100% of their students qualify for a free and reduced lunch. And they have a real need for the books. And so we have already gotten supporters from the Dixon Street Bookstore has given us books, and Barnes & Noble has as well. And so we're looking to reach out to other bookstores who would like to donate books, and certainly to the community. If you have a favorite children's book, please share. It doesn't do anybody any good on the shelf.
Students from Fayetteville High School and the university will accompany Chancellor David Gerhardt and Provost Sharon Gaber to Hughes Elementary School in Hughes in St. Francis County. The team also hopes to build bookshelves, tables, and chairs to help set up a comfortable space for the elementary school students to read in. Dr. McRae says the book drive sends out a positive message to the community.
Reading is a ticket to a better experience, both intellectually. When you read, you get to experience lots of things that you may not have experienced before. It also leads to competencies. Once you practice reading on fun things, you get to where you are good at reading. And when you're good at reading, then those textbooks aren't quite so as intimidating. And you can do better in school. You do better in school, and of course, there you go. You're off and running. College is the next step. And then the job you love to go to in the morning, that's the end result. We think it's also extremely important for people at the high school level, young people, for people at the college level who are students, for staff members, for people in administration, people everywhere, to be mindful that there are people out there who aren't as lucky as we are, who may not have grown up with books and love books in the same way. And if we can get those books out there early in a child's life, then they can share the same kinds of experiences that we appreciate every day.
The program collects all kinds of books, especially ones which stir the imagination and get elementary school students excited about reading. These include quality pop-up books and classics that inspire discussions and are easy to read to a room full of kids.
I think it has to do with human interaction always. Everything comes back to that. We can have all the devices we want. We're still trying to reach out to people. And I think that when we have lovely books that can be read to children and children can interact and feel that personal connection, I think television loses a little of its attraction, and maybe some of those handheld devices lose a little bit of their attraction. I grew up in a television age, and we didn't have the handheld devices, but we had those kinds of distractions. But in school, when we had teachers who encouraged discussion of these books, and you wanted to be an insider because you had read it, I think that kind of thing will continue to exist, and the more we can encourage it, the better. We need these kids to understand how those handheld devices are made, how they can be improved. I mean, we need more than that, too, of course, and we need a literate society, and to have that, kids are going to have to keep reading.
Book drops are located in several places on the university campus as well as outside of it.
There are book drops in the library, and the Fayetteville Public Library and the Mullins Library. We have them in the residence halls. We have them on the Fayetteville High School campus. We're trying to make them as available as possible. Any business that would like to put a book drop box in their business, we'd love to have it out there and have you participating with us and helping us collect those books.
For Ozarks at Large, this is Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Yet to come on this edition of Ozarks at Large, a new program designed to teach local school students about instruments in the symphony orchestra. Plus, back today, after a one-day absence, Garrison Keillor in the Writer's Almanac and Theater Squared is extending the run of Sundown Town. We'll talk with Managing Director of Theater Squared, Martin Miller, about this latest announcement. Ozarks at Large is supported by Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, where the best of Profiles and Our Town have been combined into one Sunday section. More information is available at nwaonline.com. And the opening concert of Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, Thursday, March 17th at 7 at Walton Arts Center. Conductor Paul Haas and musicians will perform pieces from Mendelssohn, Penman, and Brahms. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
Irma Thomas, the Soul Queen of New Orleans, a title officially bestowed by local officials, was born on this date in 1941. As a teen, she sang with a Baptist church choir, even auditioning for specialty records as a 13-year-old. Her saucy debut single, You Can Have My Husband, But Don't Mess With My Man, was released in the spring of 1960, and the record quickly reached the number 22 spot on the Billboard R&B chart. She continued recording over the next few decades, and with 1991's Live, Simply the Best, Thomas earned her first ever Grammy nomination. The following year, she issued True Believer, and in 93, she released her first gospel effort, Walk Around Heaven. She waited until 1997 to release her next secular record, The Story of My Life. Thomas shifted gears radically for 1998's Sing It. 2 years later, saw the release of My Heart's in Memphis, The Songs of Dan Penn. After the Rain, released in 2006, was nominated for a Best Contemporary Blues Album Grammy. Simply Grand, was issued on Rounder Records in 2008 and featured Thomas in an acoustic setting accompanied by a host of piano players, including Dr. John, Ellis Marsalis, Randy Newman, and others. On this date in 1882, Senora Smart was born in Jenny Lind, Arkansas, the daughter of William Jackson Smart, a farmer and Civil War veteran, and Ellen Victoria Cheek Smart. Senora Louise Smart Dodd is known as the mother of Father's Day. In 1909, Dodd heard a church sermon about Mother's Day, which had recently become a recognized holiday, and she wondered why there was no Father's Day. On June 6, 1910, Dodd suggested establishing such a holiday to the Spokane Ministerial Association and the Young Men's Christian Association. The first Father's Day was celebrated in Spokane on June 19, 1910, 14 days after Dodd's father's birthday. Buona Devil, the movie that heralded the 3D fad of the 1950s, opened in New York City on this date in 1953. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside
the
Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, the editor of What's Up. We're excited because it's been a couple of weeks because of snow that you haven't been able to come here.
If it snows this weekend.
Well, then the forecasts are way off.
Yeah, exactly. But this is a rare weekend. Well, no, it's really not rare. It's one of those weekends where you can't do everything you want to do, no matter how you stretch the space-time continuum.
Right.
So I have prepared for you, live and in the studio, two itineraries, one with kids and one without.
Okay.
Here's Family Friendly.
Go.
Tonight, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, 8 o'clock, Rogers Little Theater. Balcony tickets are $9.50 for kids and $17 for adults. You can feed them a hot dog on the way. You don't need to do dinner theater. If you don't know the show, it was commissioned as a cantata.
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
And Tim Rice, who went on to do Jesus Christ Superstar and Evita. But this is nothing like Andrew Lloyd Webber's great anthem musicals. The music is everything from country western to disco. The kids will love it. And it'll be an educational experience, too.
Rogers Little Theater.
Tomorrow, The World of Spiders and Insects with the University of Arkansas Entomology Department.
Excellent.
1 to 3 o'clock at the Bentonville Public Library. Mm-hmm. It's free.
Okay. That's very family friendly.
Absolutely. And at 2 or 7, Anne Frank and Me is at Arts Live Theater in Fayetteville. Tickets are $4 to $6. It's at the Studio Theater at their home.
On Sang Avenue.
And it follows a 14-year-old as she journeys into the past to Nazi-occupied France. And she finds herself living there as a Jew. Jason Sewell's directing. Mary Claire Allen is playing the lead. It should be another educational experience. And it's $4 for kids and $6 for adults.
Very inexpensive.
I haven't broken the bank for you yet. Or if you're in the River Valley or want to drive to the River Valley, All Shook Up is at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Starts at 8 o'clock. It's the songs of Elvis Presley, woven into a story about a motorcycle riding stranger who comes to a small town.
So it's kind of Mamma Mia, but with Elvis music. I mean,
yeah.
That's that sort of concept. It tells
yes.
a narrative using the music of one artist.
Precisely. He's so smart. And they tell me that it's good for 8 and up.
Okay.
As far as family friendly.
Isn't it funny how things change? Because when Elvis was a young man appearing on Ed Sullivan, no one would have ever said that it's appropriate for 8 and up, right? They were trying
well,
to keep kids from
watching. Well,
there would
have been great
watching.
Trauma, right. Yes. Now, it's the bank breaker compared to everything else. Tickets are $20 for kids, $30 for adults. 632-2129 to make reservations. And on Sunday, remember how I wanted to see Trout Fishing in America at the Alma Performing Arts Center?
It was a show that kind of got postponed once because of weather, right?
Got then, postponed the second time because of weather.
So you didn't get to see him there?
And now they've moved it to sometime later this year. But Trout will be performing at 2 o'clock Sunday at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville, and it's a benefit for Special Olympics.
Will you be there?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, just checking.
Oh, yeah. Tickets are $17.50 at 873-0808. And if it snows, like I said,
it's not going to.
I'm be really mad.
It's not going to.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Okay. Now the adults-only itinerary. Mm-hmm. Tonight,
The Mousetrap, and Encore Weekend at Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. They tried to have the show for two weekends. They did, but it snowed, and so they've added a third weekend.
Good.
You know, it's a familiar story about a group of guests at a country inn. A murder mystery.
Right. You say adults only, but I think teenagers. I mean, it's an Agatha Christie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is, I'm thinking of date night versus
taking
the kids out.
Okay.
So
I see.
It starts at 7:30. Tickets are $9 to $20. 751-5441. Or if you're in the River Valley, guess what you can see at Fort Smith Little Theater?
Mousetrap.
The Mousetrap. It starts at 8 o'clock and tickets are $10. 783-1295. Saturday evening. Starting at 6 o'clock with appetizers, the Dance Coalition is doing So You Think You Know How to Dance. Dance competitions are really popular.
You can't turn on the TV without seeing one now.
Not sure I understand it, but this is the Dance Coalition's way of raising money for dance education events and performances. And there will be every age of dancer. The couple we featured in What's Up Today are 12 and 13 years old. Hmm. They dance 6 hours a week in lessons.
Wow.
Plus another four or five practicing. There will be people in their 60s who ballroom dance. There will be hip-hop dancers. Everything. Tickets are $10 just for the dance competition, or $25 for the appetizer hour, a silent auction, and premium seating.
Excellent.
DanceCoalition.com. Or at the Walton Arts Center, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Doing the music of Cab Calloway.
How can you not love that?
I mean, if you're at all familiar with Cab Calloway, you know this is like the original feel-good music. He was just his music is enthusiastic, and I mean this in the best way, bombastic and just fun and intricate. It's great music.
And it started with them playing Minnie the Moocher as a cover.
And if you're not, you are familiar with Minnie the Moocher, even if you don't think you are.
Absolutely.
It's that chorus that you can sing along with.
And then it grew up to be an album that was released in April 2009. And now they're on tour to support the album. So showtime is 8 o'clock, I believe, and tickets start at $32. On Sunday, the last chance. I've told you, the last Eagle Watch tour for the season, 3 o'clock at the Rocky Branch Marina near Rogers. Tickets are $10 for adults. It is an amazing, beautiful, wonderful. I think we only saw six eagles.
But six more than you'll see here.
Sunny and beautiful, and you'll have a great time. 789-5000. And Sunday evening, Three Penny Acre in concert at 7:30 at the Nadine Baum Studios. A wrap-up of Sundown Town. Tickets are $10 at 443-5600.
They'll be performing in front of the set.
Doing some of the songs from the show, but also their own music. Right. And I think it'll be great fun.
And from what I understand from Brian of Three Penny Acre, this is about the only chance you're going to get to see them this winter in Fayetteville.
So take the chance.
There you go. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
This is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's program, I will feature an exclusive interview I did with Esperanza Spalding, the bassist and vocalist who recently won a Grammy Award. And I will also pay tribute to the late, great George Shearing. Plus music from John Pizzarelli, Joanne Brackeen, Joe Lovano, and much more. That's Shades of Jazz, Friday night at 10 p.m.
For the third time this season, Theater Square is extending the run of a production. This was scheduled to be the final weekend for the original script of Sundown Town, being produced at Nadine Baum Studios. But the play will continue beyond Sunday. Martin Miller is the managing director of Theater Squared and is with me in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
The decision to extend Sundown Town made in the past several hours?
Really, very, very recently. We have, since the beginning with Sundown Town, basically said, This is not a show we can extend. The cast is too large. Got 9 cast members, 4 musicians, including Fayetteville's own Threepenny Acre. And it's the most significant financial investment we've made in our history on one production, because as a professional company, everyone's drawing a weekly salary because our premise is that working artists should be able to do what they do for a living. But yes, literally within the last 12 hours, we got everyone together. We approached a group of donors about helping us to extend it. We talked to the cast. We talked to the band. We worked out some complicated logistics, and we're going to try to play this show for another 700 Northwest Arkansas audience members this coming week.
Is a sellout enough to extend a run, or do you have to know that there is demand beyond the sellout?
Well, normally, when you're extending a run, you want to announce it with at least 2 weeks' notice so people have time to get their tickets and make their plans. The box office let us know that they were turning so many people away in the last couple days for this weekend's performances that we just took it on instinct that we're going to be able to reach out to those people and to other people who might be hearing about this show and let them know that we've got another 4 performances coming up for them.
So is it the traditional sort of weekend schedule?
It's a traditional schedule with one variation. It is a Thursday night at 7:30, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 7:30, so there's no Saturday matinee, and then Sunday at 2 p.m.
Tickets available?
Tickets available. Call the Walton Arts Center box office, 479-443-5600, or by visiting Theater Square's website at theater2.org.
Are you just rewarding procrastinators now?
Well, I've always been a procrastinator myself, Kyle, so I cannot judge them. Do you mind if I also thank the folks that came forward in the last 12 hours to help us extend this run? Because
absolutely,
we wouldn't be doing it without them.
Absolutely.
Basically, the financial equation only makes sense if there are a couple individuals who say, all right, we think it's worth showing this to some more people. Those folks are Hershey and Denise Garner, Nick and Carolyn Cole, Romance Diamond Company, Patrick and Terry Brosh, proprietors, Steve and Linda Nelson, and Bob Kohler and Laura Goodwin. And they all came together and said, yes, this is important. Let's continue it.
This is the third consecutive production this season you've added shows.
This is the third. This is the third production that we've had to add performances or a full week in order to accommodate demand. It is. It's a new day for theater in Northwest Arkansas.
From what I understand, Anne Frank and Me from Arts Live this week is playing to full or more than full audiences.
It sure is a testament to how hungry people are that there can be a number of things going on at once, as there were last week as well with Mamma Mia and a 2-foot snowstorm, and still there's enough audience to fill the theaters. I think people in this region have always wanted it, and now it's here, and we're happy to meet that demand along with our colleagues in the community.
Martin Miller is the managing director for Theater Squared. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. I hope everyone can make it out.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Walton Arts Center has created a new program to help teach local students about instruments in the orchestra. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has the details.
Strings. Brass. Winds. Percussion. These are the families of instruments commonly found in an orchestra. Fourth graders in Northwest Arkansas will get to learn more about them through the Walton Arts Center's Orchestra Family Residency. The pilot program will introduce students to these instruments through mini concerts at their school. Laura Goodwin, Vice President of Learning and Engagement at Walton Arts Center, says the program was inspired by the dreams of local music teachers.
Basically, with all of our education programs that serve schools, we want to solve an existing problem. So we're always having conversations with teachers, asking them how, what is it that we can do that can help you reach your students, that can improve student achievement in your teaching area. And so when we approached music teachers, which with the question, you know, how can we help you teach your music classes, they said that hearing live music was so very important for children, and also the opportunity to hear the instruments that are used in an orchestra. There's just many children don't have the opportunity to hear those instruments live, and so was there a way that we could bring the orchestra family instruments into the school?
Mimi Hagers, elementary music teacher at Vandergriff Elementary School in Fayetteville, explains that it's one thing to hear a recording of music, but there's nothing quite like hearing it live. She is one of the teachers who spoke with Goodwin about creating this program, and she's ecstatic to have her dream fulfilled so soon.
I mean, it truly is just the dream, and I feel like this year will be the finest education that my students have ever received in the instruments of the orchestra. It's going to far exceed anything I've ever done for them in the past, just because of this live performance component. And we're going to be able to follow up and ask them questions and get more information to the kids based on what they saw even after the fact. And so it's wonderful. And it's taught me that even in the future, if I don't have this next year, say I don't have all these, you know, exact same performances coming, which may or may not be the case, that I feel empowered to teach in a better way, just from the guidance that I've received from people that know so much about this information.
Matthias in Bellevue Elementary Schools in Rogers and Asbell Elementary School in Fayetteville will also participate in the residency, which is funded in part by a grant from the Mid-America Arts Alliance. From now through the month of May, regional musicians will perform a concert each month featuring one of the families of instruments.
Well, the kids are going to be familiar with what they hear in those concerts because their music teachers are already going to be sharing that repertoire with the kids in advance. So they're going to recognize the Mozart piece they're going to hear, or they're going to recognize the Bizet piece from Carmen. So they're going to already have in their ear the tune of what they're going to hear at these mini concerts. The other thing is that the unit gives an opportunity to learn other things about music. For instance, the string unit not only teaches about the string instruments of the orchestra, but there's also a focus on dynamics. And so each of the music pieces that are played during that mini concert emphasizes a different musical dynamic.
In addition to performing in schools, these musicians will also host mini concerts for local residents at the Rogers and Fayetteville Public Libraries.
It's for every fourth grade student, and we chose that grade level with our teacher's guidance because that is the time in the curriculum when they're really focused on those orchestra families. So that's the time that it makes sense curriculum-wise to introduce and reinforce that material. That being said, when we take the residency mini concerts into our public libraries, it's going to be interesting to a broader range than just fourth graders. And so we know that we'll be serving families that have a range of children, probably from anywhere from kindergarten on up to, you know, middle school even. And in fact, adults are going to find a lot to learn. So if you don't know much about the instrument families, you can come to a mini concert and learn all you need to know.
One of the benefits of the residency is giving students a chance to hear orchestral music, something they may not have had the opportunity to experience otherwise.
You know, our world is changing, and not every family has the opportunity to hear symphonic music live. There used to be more opportunity in our community, and we're actually very, very excited because SONA, the Symphony Orchestra of Northwest Arkansas, is playing its first concert in March, and so we know that those opportunities are going to expand for our community, but the fact is that for many, many people, hearing symphonic music has not been on their radar screen or something that they know they're interested in. And so just having the opportunity to share this live music with students is a real foundational experience, and one that as they grow and develop, they'll come back to again and again. And they'll never hear symphonic music in the same way because they'll have more knowledge about it, and so it'll be more meaningful to them.
Goodwin says she hopes the pilot program is well received. After this year, her hope is to revise what needs to be revised in order to improve the residency so it can be a model for other schools in the future. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And speaking of Walton Arts Center, the official announcement came earlier today that the sale of the Arkansas Music Pavilion, or the AMP, to Walton Arts Center is now official. And new shows have been added for the AMP spring schedule. They include the electronic music show Pretty Lights, Lucinda Williams on May 1st, the band Perry May 26th, and Primus on May 27th. This is Ozarks at Large.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. We've got Mel Brown, Laura Price, the Delta Generators, the Sugar Prophets, James Kynes, Deb Callahan, John J.T. Thompson, and a few others. And again, that's every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Fayetteville High School will be one of the sites for College Goal Sunday, a federal financial aid awareness program co-sponsored by the Arkansas Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators and the Arkansas Department of Higher Education. It will take place Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4 in the Great Big Lab. There will be volunteers from the University of Arkansas Financial Aid Office and FHS there to help families fill out their paperwork. There will also be a couple of interpreters. For more information, arcollegegoalsunday.com. That's arcollegegoalsunday.org. And just a couple of notes before we end this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. You can now, again, subscribe to Ozarks at Large podcast through iTunes. And every edition of Daily Ozarks at Large, going all the way back to August 2nd of last year, is available. For more information about the Ozarks at Large podcast, you can go to the Ozarks at Large page at KUAF.com. And the Arkansas Razorback women's basketball team did something last night that had never happened before in the program's history. The team defeated Ole Miss in Oxford. That means since joining the SEC, the women have now won in every league city save, obviously, Knoxville, home of the Lady Vols. That could be next year. Up next for the Razorback women, LSU in Bud Walton Arena, Sunday afternoon at 2. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Rocky Grove, Missouri, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, KUAF.com. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks for tuning in. Sunday morning at 9, the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large, some of our favorite stories from the past week, as well as some new stories. And then Monday at noon, we'll start a brand new week of brand new Daily Ozarks at Large. This is KUAF 91.3 FM. Have a great Friday and a safe weekend.